Thanks. Let's return again to the first perek of Cholin, Daf Yud Amud Beis, toward the middle of the Amud. Minaha Milsa Damur Rabbanan, Oke Milsa Cheske. From where in the Torah does Chazal derive the principle that an entity is presumed to retain its legal status until we have information to the contrary? Amar Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmani, Amar Rabbi Yonasan. Amar Kra, V'yatsa HaKohen Min HaBayis, Al Pesach HaBayis, V'yiskiras HaBayis Shivas Yomi. The Baal HaBayis comes to the Kohen to inform him that there is some discoloration on the wall of his house, which resembles, in his non-authoritative judgment, Nega HaTzaras. After confirming that the spot is the right color and size to qualify as Taras, the Kohen leaves the house, closes the door, and declares the house off limits for 1 week. At the end of this waiting period, the Kohen returns to see if the spot has spread. Since it is not possible for the Kohen to keep the spot in his sight until the door is actually closed, he has to assume at the moment he declares the house off limits that the spot is still of sufficient size without actually knowing so. Dilma adinafik fa'asa batzar le'shi'ura. Maybe as he exits the house, the spot's already begun shrinking and is less than the minimum shiur. Ela lav mishum damrin and okei acheske. It must perforce be that we presume the nega is just as large as it was when the Kohen last saw it before he turned away to leave. Now Rav Acha bar Yaakov attacks the proof. Maskif la Rav Acha bar Yaakov v'dilma kigon sheyatza derech achorav. Rav Acha notes a weakness of the proof. The fact that the Kohen has to exit the house isn't sufficient to prove that he cannot keep the nega in sight, since he can exit walking backwards, that is, backing away from the nega, watching it until the door slams shut. Note that Rav Acha's statement at first seems to be an attack on the proof. There's no compelling reason in the fact that he must exit the house to inject chazaka into the mix. This appears in its original context here merely to be an objection to the proof. The Rishonim, notably Tosfos here, will understand Rav Acha's objecting to the entire notion of chazaka as a Torah institution, perhaps. We'll discuss this a bit more after we consider the attempts to overturn Rav Acha's objection by Abaye and his subsequent defense in the hands of Rava and the Baalei Sogya. Abaye raises two objectives to Rav Acha's attack on the scriptural source for chazaka. First, the Torah specifically requires that the Kohen exit, for Yotza Kohen. Amar le Abaye shteish tshuvos badavar chada di yitziya derech achorav lashma yitziya. Now, from where does this objection actually arise? It seems at first so arbitrary, just redefine Yitzhi in such a way to exclude Rav Acha's attack. But this trivializes Abaye's objection. Again, the Torah makes a point of stating that the Kohen must exit the house. Every word in the Torah is capitalized, namely it has significance in a potentially technical way. The halacha actuates the technical nature of every word, particularizes it. If there were nothing to be learned from the words V'yatza Kohen, the Torah wouldn't have included them in its tight, concise phrasing of the law. We might have understood that he left anyway, since he has to close up the house and seal it off from occupation. He can't do that without leaving. The non-trivial words V'yatza HaKohen must tell us something non-trivial. In Abaye's formulation, they tell us how he must leave the house, in the normal way, walking out, facing Rishus HaRabim. The technical meaning of Yitzhiya is then walking forward, moving away from one's current position, facing one's destination. Am I overstating the case here? I don't think so. I'm merely anxious to emphasize to you the careful reading of Gemara so that we never make the text trivial, arbitrary. You say you can walk out backwards, Rav Acha. I, Abaye, will answer by saying walking out backwards isn't walking out. This is the kind of non-rigorous, trivial, arbitrary understanding of non-trivial, non-arbitrary dialectic that may qualify one to teach Gemara in most yeshiva high schools today. Don't ever make the mistake of ascribing less rigor to Chazal than average human beings display in everyday conversation. If you think the Shaklin Antarya of the Sugya is trivial and arbitrary, it's doubtless because you failed to understand it. And the second objection? Even if we didn't have the problem of Yitzhiya, there will always be a spot that the Kohen couldn't have seen. Va'od, achorei adelus ma'ika lememar. An arbitrary objection? I can find a spot which he couldn't see? Most of the time he can. Ah, but the Torah never specifies where the nega must be. It declares all the information we need to know, no more. example, V'yatza Kohen, and no less. It doesn't tell us the spot cannot be behind the door where the Kohen for certain cannot see it. Therefore, it must be that the Torah assumes we rely on Chazaka. Now, I assume you've seen the remainder of the discussion here in the Sugya. We'll satisfy ourselves with the following observations. First, from the Shak Levitar you hear, it isn't clear if Rav Acha entirely rejects the notion of Chazaka or merely objects to the Raya from Saras Abayis. It shouldn't surprise us then to see Rishoni lining up on both sides of the question. Second, the conclusion of the Sugya is that there is indeed a way to explain the case of the Nega on the wall of the house without requiring the Kohen to rely on Chazaka. It is, however, sufficiently extreme to allow for the simpler view that the Torah has indeed established a source for Chazaka, so we're left with a machlokas amoraim at worst, and a unanimous view that Chazaka is mina Torah, not just specifically from this mitzvah of Hesker Bais. We shouldn't be surprised to find that notion also in the Rishoni. Now, we touched last time on the observation that Rashi is often just a local parshan. Namely, he offers a simple, philologically precise perush of the Gemara up to the spot where we are now without any intention of adjudicating halacha. The problem is, though, that halacha is perush of the sugya. If there's any global point I want to make this year about the study of halacha, it's precisely that. We need to know shitos in order to decide psak. But the mere cataloging of shitos, though, the memorization of final conclusions of a series of poskim is not Talmud Torah. I'm not certain one makes Birchos HaTorah on the Luach Minagei Beis HaKnesses. If we study halacha in such a fashion without a zika lasugya, a connection to the shakal levitari of the Gemara, we will not ever be qualified to be Morei Hora. I will emphasize Havana here. Torah is not a collection of arbitrary facts to be memorized, but a divinely ordered system of moving parts in which our bodies adhere to the conclusions drawn by our intellects. Halacha is also Talmud Torah. So let's move on then to the reason we began with the sugya, the important yesod of Basar Ruba Azlinat, and contrast it with Chazaka in order to understand its source and nature. This will cause us to double back on some of the points in the Rishonim to which I alluded. Now, at the top of Daf Yud Aleph Amud Aleph, Minaha Milsa, the Amur Rabban, and Zil Basar Ruba. Remember the Chasam Sofer's insightful observation of the difference in wording between the two questions, the one relating to Chazaka, where we are okay Milsa Cheske, and the one we read now, Zil Basar Ruba. We read into the two formulations that Chazaka is an institution of halachic inertia, an act of omission, a shev v'altase. We presume nothing has changed until we've reason to effect a legal change in status. In Rov, however, Zil Basar Ruba Azlinan, we actively effect that change by commission, by following the Rov. Now the Gemara asks, Minolon, where indeed? The force here is, why it's obvious. From the institution of Dayoni, has the Torah not declared in Parshas Ki Tisa, Acharei Rabim Lahatos? Now every line here is loaded with meaning. Let's stop here and focus carefully. The Gemara has first established the basis, at least in the anonymous and therefore likely majority view, that Chazaka may be derived from Hesker Bayis HaMenuga. In three places in Shas, check out the Masoros of Shas, the Gemara assumes a principle of halachic logic, Rov Adif Mechazaka. A Rov is logically more compelling than a Chazaka and trumps it when the two come into conflict. Now come along the Balei Tosfos and ask the following question. Dibor HaMasil Menoha Milso. V'ite makeven damrinan zil basar chazaka, kol shekein basar ruba, de ruba v'chazaka, ruba adif. Tosus asks, since we know that we follow chazaka, and furthermore that chazaka is weaker than rov, shouldn't we know rov merely by virtue of the fact that we know chazaka? This is hugely important here, so let's make certain to get it. First of all, note that Tosus doesn't use the precise language that the Gemara does, okay milsa acheske, to which the Chasam Sofer pointed our attention. This is intentional. Not that Tosfos ignored the Chasam Sofer. Of course, they didn't have the same Chasam Sofer. What I mean is that they ignored the obvious point that the Gemara used different language here. This is not a history class. We're sitting down with the same text. The Tosfos, the Chasam Sofer, the Nibadei L'Chaim, our group here, all have the same text in front of us. Tosfos cast the conclusion of the previous sugya as having established the tokef, the very real legal force of Chazaka. If we follow an entity's presumptive legal state, why do we need to learn a source for Rove at all? The two are inextricably intertwined through logic. If I know one, I perforce know the other. We're in a single sugya here. establish chazaka, and the rest of the sugya isn't necessary. Now, for Rashi, this isn't a problem. We're in a new sugya, following what the Meiri calls Derech HaTalmud, the Gemara's unique stream of consciousness, chain of illusion and memory that just needs a hook in one sugya, like the name of Memora citing halachas of his Rebbe. Remember in our first meeting on Daf Tes, Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav, Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, series of halachas in the name of his Rebbe for the related to Shechita. All that the Gemara needs is a hook like this to prompt a new discussion. So Perush Rashi, Dibur Amaschil, Minoha Milsa, Ayyadei Da'ayre B'minoha Milsa D'chazaka Nakat Namiha. While we're on the topic of chazaka, Rashi says, which is the yesod in legal reasoning, let's cover off on Rov. Not so, say Balei Tosfos. The two are inextricably related in Shas. One chazaka, the weaker, less compelling logic, entails the other, Rov, the stronger logic that trumps the former. Answer Tosfos. Yesh lomar, de l'rav acha bar Yaakov bai, de lo kinle chazaka mikra. The only reason we question the source of chazaka is for the man da'amar Rav Acha bar Yaakov, who doesn't maintain that there is a source in the Torah for chazaka. The conclusion from Tosfos' answer, the anonymous view, that Hesker HaBayis HaManuka is an effective source for chazaka, doesn't require a source for Rov. Because learning chazaka from the Torah is enough to establish a source for Rov as well. For we hold chazaka at everything that it logically entails. Now at this point in Tosfos, I'm astounded. Whenever the Torah establishes a sod, we've effectively established everything else which we could independently derive from it logically. Chazal observe on their own that Rov is adiv mi-chazaka, therefore we require no source for Rov. Okay, logic is a good thing. Now I've elevated it to being a source of law. Not so fast. We still have Rabbeinu Chaim. We'll come back to him, though. What might we have thought otherwise? I would have said, I think, that the principle, Rov Adif Mechazaka, only tells me how to referee the two principles when they come into conflict. Chazal's Yesod that Rov Adif Mechazaka is only necessary once I know that both Rov and Chazaka have legal force. If I don't know Rov from a source, then there's no point in saying Rov Adif Mechazaka. The klal is one of relative authority. Without first establishing two separate sources of authority, one for Chazaka and one for Rov, the klal is meaningless. Tosfos HaRosh mentions just such an opinion in the Rishonim. First, he asks Tosfos' question. The Itema Kevin Shalamanu Daz Linen Basar Chazaka Kol Shekein Basar Ruba De Kaimelan Ruba VeChazaka Ruba Adif. The Yesh Mitartzin, the Hainu Basar Diyad Inan Dazlina Basar Ruba. Some have answered Tosfos' question, as I thought the answer. Only after we know that there are two principles, Chazaka and Rov, does it make sense to say which is stronger in a conflict between the two. Until I have a source for both, though, it doesn't really matter which I think is more substantial logically. Now that's great, that Rov appears to be more formidable logically. But maybe the Torah doesn't rely on Rov. Therefore we need to ask, what's the source for Rov? Now the apparatus at the bottom of the Mosad Rav Cook edition of the Tosfos HaRosh references the Shita Mekubetzes as the source for this Teirutz to Tosfos Kasha. But I saw it in the Rashba after it occurred even to me. The Rashba says, when can I say this? Basar de'ifshitalan dazlina basar ruba. Only after somebody's already explained to me that we do in fact go after the rove, follow the rove. Avaad de lo kaimalan iazlina basar ruba lo lo mochinan la me chazaka de emor basar chazaka azlina below basar ruba klal akan lishono shalarash. This is what I myself, Lefi Anius Dati, said in a much less sophisticated way when I learned the sugya. Right? What we say is, until I know that we do, I have a source for Rove, we might have thought there's no reason to say that we're going to follow Rove if we follow Chazaka. It might be that the Torah has a recognizes Chazaka, but somehow doesn't recognize Rove. Who are we to come along and apply to it our logical constraints and force our own logic on the Torah? The Lanahira, I ain't Sham, Divrei Tosfos HaRosh. He doesn't like what I had to say. He doesn't like what the Rashba had to say. So I ain't Sham, Divrei Tosfos HaRosh, the Lanahira. Tosfos HaRosh outright rejects the reasoning that the Rashba and his Talmud of so many later years, me, cannot see at all. Here's his point. If we require a source for Rove, then we require a source for its logical superiority to Chazaka. We only know the superiority of Rove through Svara. This is true whether or not there is a source for Rove. We still need to rely on Svara, on logic, to referee the two. Svara, in the end, has to be the determining factor for Rove, so Tosfos' question remains unanswered. Now let's go back to the end of the Tosfos. Ulemai de mifareish Rabbeinu Chaim, Dehadaruba adiv mechazaka, lo mistaber, ella, lo misvara, sorry, ella, mi para aduma, daslin and basaruba. Afa gav de ika chazaka, geneged arov, de oke gavra, shemezin alav bechezkas tome, asi shapir. In para aduma, we have a rove and a chazaka, and we follow the rove. We'll come back to the details at some point. Let's stick with the argument here. Tosfos say that since we have a source for Rove trumping a Chazaka, the whole thing makes sense. We need an independent source for Rove. We see a Chazaka not being determinant where we think there is a Chazaka, and we now know the reason why, because we follow Rove, and we can logically identify the Rove that's operative in that case. Therefore, Para Aduma serves in the Gemara, it's one of the proofs that the Gemara brings, serves twofold purpose. Not only does it establish Rove, but it establishes Rove trumping a Chazaka, because in that case there's a Chazaka. What's the Chazaka? The Chazaka is that the person was, in the strongest Chazaka, by the way, Cheskas HaGuf. As I said after Shir last time when somebody asked me, that the Cheskas HaGuf is the strongest of all Chazakas, according to Chazal. So here we have the person is in Becheskas Tmeimes, right? And here we have a rove. What's the rove? The rove is the Gemara, as I'm sure you saw in the Gemara, that because the Torah refers to Parah Aduma as a Chatos, and the Parah Aduma, therefore, has to be Shechted Shlema, and it has to be burned Shlema, right? So we don't cut it up. Of course, it would have to be Shechted Shlema, but we don't... we burn it also, Shlema, and consequently, we have to rely on Rove to know that it's not a trefa, because you can't look into the animals. We have no way of knowing, so we obviously rely on Rove. But the person, it was Becheskas Tumah. Well, why don't we just keep that person in the Chazaka of Tumah? Why don't we just keep him that Chazaka, because we don't have specific information that the animal was, not a trefa, and that the proper Torah was effected. Answer, the Rove, not only do we have a source for Rove, that we rely on Rove behemos or not trefos, but we also have a source that we do not apply Chazaka here, because we have a Rove. So here we have both, Rabbeinu Chaim says, and the source in the Gemara there not only establishes Rove, but establishes Rove where there's a potential contradictory Chazaka. Now Tosfos HaRosh gives another answer that's similar to Rabbeinu Chaim's answer. I'm going to characterize both, and they're almost exactly the same. The Gemara here brings several sources for Rove from the Torah. Rabbeinu Chaim focuses on one of them, Parah Aduma, but we also have the Sarir HaMishtaleach. Right, and just like with the Parah Aduma, we don't have any specific information that the Parah Aduma qualified. So why do we not then leave the person upon whom we pour the mixture of ashes in his presumptive state of Tamei Meis? Answers Rabbi Nochayim, the Sefer Torah here effectively establishes its logical superiority as well, because it entails the trumping of a presumptive state of Tumah. The example of Sarah Mishtalech also. How do we know that Sa'ir is not a Trefa when we send it away? Because of Rove, because Rove behemoths are not Trefos. And we must be relying on Rove and at the same time simultaneously ignoring a Chazakah. What's the Chazakah? Chazakah of Chotin Shalonis Kapru. Why not leave them in their state of not being, atoned for? And we obviously don't. So the Rove, not only do we have a source for Rove, because we assume that the Sarim Mishtaleach was not a Trefa, but we also have a trumping, the Chazkas Aguf, of the person being in a state of the chote, of the chotin is being in a state of not having kapara. Now, none of this is necessary for the Rashba, right? And one thing I'm going to want to talk about is what's the svara chitzona, the underlying assumption that drives this machlokas rishoni. But let's move on, not because we don't want to attempt an answer to this question, but because we need more information. So for next time, please review the Sugya, Tosfos, the Rashba, and the Tosfos HaRosh, so we can discuss further. But for the time being, now let's go get some more information from our Sugya to help us answer the question, and also to take us into the heart of Issa V'Heter, which we're only now approaching. So the Gemara asks, Minolon. Minolon indeed. It's obvious. Acharei Rabim Latos. We know that when we have a divided Sanhedrin, the law is established by the majority opinion. Why? Why? Well, of course, because this is Gezeiros HaKasuv. The Torah says so. But I have to understand what the Torah is saying, not Tama Mitzvahs, but what the content of the Mitzvah is. I need to understand what the Torah is saying so I know how to apply it. Is the Torah saying only that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to follow the Rove in Sanhedrin, or is there something more? Is the Sanhedrin a prototypical case for other applications? Like things that resemble the Sanhedrin. Well, that's why we need to ask, what's the content of this particular Torah case? So let's hone in on the Sanhedrin case. So we may have a small Sanhedrin of Chaf Gimel Dayanim, or we might have the Bez Din HaGadol, the Lishkas HaGazis, the 71 Dayanim. We take a vote. You look at Masechus Sanhedrin, the Rambam Eyal for a description of the procedure. No hanging chads there. By the end of the vote, we know the breakdown. We have in front of so many ayes, so many nays, or so many to indict and so many not to indict, so many to be metahir, so many to be metame. What do we have here? A defined sample in statistical terms. A defined sample for which we know the numerical breakdown. Perhaps this is the character of the Sanhedrin paradigm. And only where I have such a distinct, explicit breakdown do I follow Rove. Here's another example, then discussed by the Gemara in Ksubas and here in Cholin. You have 10 butcher shops in town. 9 sell kosher and 1 non-kosher. There's no way to distinguish by looking at a package of meat from whence it came. Let's say they're all in plain brown wrappers. I find one package in the street. I know the statistical distribution of kosher and non-kosher shops in town. The Rove of Sanhedrin may apply here. Now that's what the Gemara says. It gives us these two examples. So as you no doubt know from our Sugya, Chazal call this a Rove de Issa Kamon. We have the entire sample in front of us, and we know the breakdown. Now, this is to be distinguished from general observations about an entire population where I only have a sample that may not be a random sample. For instance, Chazal believed that the majority of people in the world will mature to be fully developed adults. So, therefore, I've got a Rove de Lesa Kamon. I have an example of a girl who has not yet passed puberty, and she was Ashishish, and somebody committed adultery with her, and I don't know yet whether or not she's an Ilonis. I can assume that she is not an Ilonis, right, and that she will reach majority, both age-wise and physically. Even though this is, I've never seen the whole, there's no one who's ever tested the entire rov. This is a rov de lesa kamon. Right? So this is the Gemara's distinction here between a rov de isa kamon and a rov de lesa kamon. Now, two major questions need to be answered. First, what did we profit by adding the rov of the Teisha Chanuyos to the rov of Sanhedrin? In the Sanhedrin, I might have thought that it's really like a Beirur. It really tells me, I know that when I have a majority of Chachamim say something, that there's a reason to think that the majority got it right. So I can say that Yachid V'Rabim, Halacha K'Rabim, not just for convenience, but there's a Svara there. But what Svara leads me to conclude that this package of meat is from one of the majority of stores? It's not exactly the same thing. Let's say that I go to that particular part of town and the one kosher, I'm on the street of the one non-kosher shop. Right? Maybe there's a greater possibility. There's no svara to think that the person who was dropped this package walking out was walking out of one of the kosher shops, even if they're all together. There's no svara to think. Neither of them is more probable than any other one is probable. So the Gemara definitely adds a new concept, it appears, by adding the second example of Teisha Chanuyos. They're not the same. The Sanhedrin case is probability, you know, pure and simple, whereas there's more logical evidence for following a majority view. Now let's go further. Once we've answered this, how can this then turn out to be the source for Tarovus Issa V'Heter? Okay. What do I mean here? Well, we're going to see throughout Shas. Let's flip to in Chulin here to Daf Tzadi Ches Amud Beis. We can find it all over. We can find it also in we'll find it in Gittin. We'll find it all throughout our sugyos here. We'll find it in several places. How could this be this pasuk of Acharei Rabim Lahatos be the source as well for a tarovus? Right? What do I have in a tarovus? Well, let's take two kinds of tarovus. Okay, I have the first kind of tarovus, and now we'll use some new terms that we haven't used heretofore. The first kind of tarovus is let's call it yavesh b'yavesh. I have three meatballs. I have two meatballs that are kosher meat, and my housekeeper keeps a third in her own refrigerator. She sees that I've put them on a tray, my two meatballs, I put on a tray that I'm going to take out to the barbecue, and she brings down a third meatball, and she puts it on the tray too, so that I should put them all into the barbecue. Three meatballs are sitting there. I don't know which is the tray one. She forgets they all look the same. We don't know which is which. Right? So we're going to learn that Acharei Rabim Lahatos, Chad Betray is Batel, right? Batel Min HaTorah, in that particular mixture. That, I have three distinct meatballs. It's like the nine stores of kosher meat and the one treif store. It's like the Dayanim, right? So I can say that there's a statistical distribution. Right, I know the characteristics of the distribution. It's very much a rov de isa kamon, where everything is distinct. But how about when I have a mixture lach b'lach? I've got non-kosher gravy that fell into a pot. How can I consider a pot of kosher gravy? And there, and it's cooking. It's a kli rishon, and it's sitting on the fire, and it's cooking. And therefore, why do we cook things together? Why not just put hot things together into the same bowl? Why do we actually cook them together? It's not that they should all be hot. It's because in cooking, we have eruv tamim. We mix things up. So what happens here, well, I'm not going to talk yet about tam ki ikar. You know that that's our next sugya. But what I'm interested here in is in lach b'lach, it's impossible to separate them. In the cases that we've been talking about now, I can see I've got 23 dayanim, 71 dayanim. I've got nine the stores that sell kosher and one that sells treif. I've got three meatballs, right? I see them all sitting in front of me. I know what the characteristics are, but there's not a mixture. I can take, as a matter of fact, I could even take one, which we're going to, and throw one out, and then I know I'm not vada eating treif. Right. We're going to see all these strategies and what the Rishonim say and whether or not that strategy, that suggestion is d'oraisa or d'rabbanan. And we'll, but right now I want to think rather than just read. So how is it different? I can't take a teaspoon of, because it, let's say that a teaspoon fell into the pot or a ladle's worth fell into the pot. I can't take a ladle's worth of the mixture and real and even think for a second that I got rid of all the non-kosher gravy, because the non-kosher gravy just doesn't sit in one spot. It gets distributed lach b'lach throughout the entire pot. So how is it possible that this pasuk of Acharei Ravim Lahatos serves as the source? And Rashi will say this throughout, and we're going to read in the Rosh and Siman Lamed Zion and Parag Gid and Hashem in a minute. We're going to see that this pasuk serves as the source for Bitul Isur Berov Heter, even Las Belach. So now we have an extension of what the Gemara here restricted potentially to only Rov de Isa Kaman, or maybe even perhaps Rov de Lesa Kaman, according to one mandam are here, but certainly even the rove to Issa Kaman, yes, the pot, because it has known proportions or may have known proportions for us, or at least known minimal proportions, resembles the rove to Issa Kaman in that we understand what the distribution is, but it's all mixed together. It's not distinct in the same way. So we're going to need to understand how this pasuk has made its conceptual journey from the simple context suggested by our sugya to the more complex context that that Rashi and the Rishonim use to explain the fact that the Torah, that the Gemara treats continually the notion of Bitul Barov, Bitul Iser, Barov Heter, as flowing from the pasuk of Acharei Rabim Lahatos.